Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today is, I think it's September 10th. I'm on my Jeffrey. Jeff will be proud.
Today is September 10th.
September 10th. This is Naima and Inca today. The guys have done a man's show before. This is the first ever Pop Life Podcast Women's Edition.
Ladies first, baby.
Yeah. The Sean is on the fucking world tour.
sending us pictures of very wealthy looking shit in another country.
He's in South Africa. I can't remember where in South Africa he's in right now, but he's in South Africa coming from someplace else, about to go to someplace else. I don't know. They're on vacation, which is actually what and I'm not saying Sean is an entertainment person, but obviously, you know, Monami Entertainment, whatever, but most of the industry usually is on vacation in August.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It's kind of like a thing. I don't know why, but everybody pretty much, and it's also a New York thing. People are really gone in August. So yeah, most folks, that's when they travel. That's when you see a lot of Instagram pictures and stuff from folks in Italy. It's been all summer this year. People are making up for time from last year, but that's usually when folks are like on the Amalfi Coast, or they're going to St. Bart's, or they're at their house in the Hamptons, or they're in Sag Harbor. But August tends to be like a whole month where everybody just checks out.
I mean, as they should, though.
Well,
I would if I could.
I think it's because usually touring festival season is kind of over and winding down. And and we have Ivy in the building, obviously.
Ivy, say hello.
Okay.
So we're not going to do the same show we always do today, but obviously I want to keep some protocol in order, because that's the type of shit I do, because I'm Miss Naima. So we'll start with shout outs. But before we even get to shout outs, we have to give like a Pop Life friend of the show, friend of us group activity acknowledgement to D Nice. I do also have to acknowledge we haven't done a show in a while. So there's also that.
We haven't. But there is a good reason.
There's a good reason. All of us have been, again, it's summertime. All of us have been moving around, doing whatever. I realize it's September 10th, and I said that August is usually the month that people are away, but, you know, whatever.
It's fine. So right around the Labor Day holiday, everyone has a little exodus.
Back to school just started.
Maybe went this week.
Back to school in New York yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're just getting into fall here. And in my mind, it still is kind of August. But anyway, but we were all gone for most of August for like the last half of the month, including me, you, and Jeffrey. Crab and Jeffrey were all in L.A. for D-Nice at Hollywood Bowl for Club Quarantine Live, which was a blast. I had a blast.
I had so much fun from the time we got on the plane.
You guys, it was like an anniversary trip for y'all, right?
Met 5 years ago in August and went on our first date. We went to like a concert, so it was cool that we kind of got to do that.
Immediately had a baby and got married.
And then fell in love. There was a little gap. Please do not do my whole math, listeners.
Fell in love and had a baby and got married.
Yes. So we're 5 years in with a four-year-old. Everything's fine.
I love it. I love your story. I think your story is fantastic. It's one of my favorite things, seriously. So you guys did like a LA, like y'all went to a Dodgers game. You did everything.
We did everything. So we have to go to whatever baseball stadium is in whatever city we visit. That's our thing. So I think we've been to 6 together. So it was only right that we went to see a Dodgers game. In our section in a Dodgers game, this is how romantic our trip was. There was a literal proposal on the 7th inning stretch in the crowd. And then there was a tiny little baby in front of us. And then her 4-year-old sister was like holding her periodically. This like 3-month-old baby. It was it was too much. Like, the love was way too much that night. But we got to see an amazing sunset. I don't know who won the game. I also do not care. But we had a really good time. Saw one of my husband's best friends, got to hang with one of my best friends who's lived there for 8 years I never get to see. We did Runyon. I just want to say, fuck Runyon Canyon forever. I'm good on that for the rest of my life.
So when you see pictures of people in LA and hiking, that's Runyon Canyon. Let me tell you who's never even thought about going to Runyon. Naima ain't done it. I don't know where the fuck it even is in LA. I never go. I'm never trying to go.
Well, you know Travis is like a super fit guy, so.
None of my
I didn't want the trip to just be about stuff that I wanted to do, and I made sure that Runyon Canyon was on the list because, like, he loves stuff like that. But please know that is my very last time. You want to see the dragon?
Grand opening, grand closing. So I that's okay. We get to the show. My friend who I got tickets with got sick, so she couldn't come. So my seats were on the floor, or the garden, which is the floor. But I spent the whole
show... Your seats were everywhere.
My seats were everywhere, because I spent the whole show walking around the venue, visiting all my friends in their seats. So you and Travis, in your terrace box, the other two people in your box did not, either didn't show, or
We might have had a box for ourselves. Yeah.
Y'all had the box to yourself. So I spent the most time in y'all's box, because you were my only set of friends who had like a comfortable seating area.
Yes, okay. We had wine and chicken and
we
cookies.
So train a week. So people keep asking me, like, who was at the show and everything. All of that shit is actually immaterial, because it was the vibe. And what I realized that club quarantine gave me that I have been missing was the energy of going to Essence Fest. And
oh, absolutely.
That, and like, no matter who's on stage, there's an energy in the crowd. Like, you don't meet strangers in the Essence Fest crowd. Mm-hmm. And it's also the same kind of feel, like, even the staff is getting it in and like dancing and moving. They're very friendly, which was the case at the bowl. And there's also this sense of, it's also the same kind of thing of like, it's like a reunion thing where there's a lot of people walking around because you know so many other people who are there. So it gave me that kind of communal thing. And honestly, Derek could have just spun for 3 hours and I would have been good. But there was Sheila E., Deborah Cox, Erica Campbell,
George Clinton,
Osley Brothers, Common. Yes, and George Clinton. Let's see. Trey Songz, Tank.
Mm-hmm.
Now, George Clinton was not on the bill. And that was amazing. I don't think he was on the bill.
It was such a wonderful surprise. I was like, is this person really... I was in shock.
It was so dope to have George Clinton out. And I texted my mama and said, in Hollywood Bowl, smoking a joint while George Clinton's on stage. And she was like, I raised you right. You know, so I was just like, it was just
literally performing moment. Atomic Dog.
Yes. It was, and as soon as I got over my, you know, 22-year-old Delta ingrained fear of Atomic Dog, because it means...
Because Omega's takeover.
Because it means that a stampede of Omegas is en route to wherever I am. I was able to really enjoy that moment. And I was like,
I saw you looking around. I
was like, Atomic Dog with George Clinton on stage. Like, I was about to stop, drop, and roll. Y'all really don't understand
how my
fight or flight kicked in. Like, I was like, because I don't understand the concept of Atomic Dog as a song. That's what people have to understand. Like, not only just because of how long I've been Greek, but because I grew up in a Greek family, I do not understand the concept. And you know, went to part of college in the South, I don't understand the concept of Atomic Dog as a song. So to me, to just stand there like dance and vibe to Atomic Dog is foreign. It's a foreign concept. You move off the dance floor, lest you get bumped, trampled on, hopped on.
Yeah, I've never
carried off. We need a number of those.
I don't even have like a cute two-step in my mind that I've done to that song.
Never, ever.
It doesn't exist. I'm either trying to get off the dance floor, like you said, or looking from the side.
You're just on the side. Like, you might be doing a little head nod. You know, yeah, but it's not like
dancing. Mainly, I'm just watching these men get hype.
That's it. That's all you're doing. And I mean, of course, Chris Spencer is an Omega, who was one of the hosts of the show. He was on stage. I was probably actually looking around to see where Spice Adams was. And I found video of him later because I knew he was in the space somewhere, and I knew he was somewhere setting out a hop. Like, I knew that. And I was hoping the camera would catch him, which it didn't, but somebody else got it. But anyway, I want to give a big shout out to Derek, because I can't imagine what that night was like for him.
You could feel how grateful and excited he was just through the way he was moving. And like, ever so often he would just look out into the crowd and not really say anything. And I was like, oh, this is huge for him. This is so dope.
I know for a fact that he had a couple moments of crying during soundcheck on Saturday. Oh. So yeah, I'm pretty sure. And then like the night ended with fireworks, which was so dope.
Fireworks were incredible.
So dope. And just a beautiful venue. Like, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, Hollywood Bowl is an open-air amphitheater kind of up in the hills, up in the Hollywood Hills. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was thinking was, like, I'm never going to take the ability to just be somewhere listening to live music, you know, with people for granted ever again. Because I do it so often. And I was like, I'm never taking it for granted again, ever. It was just
concerts have always been one of my favorite things. And I've been trying to explain this to Trav, because he was not a big concert person before we met. But just like, it's the energy. Yes, I've heard these songs before. Yes, all of these people are strangers. But to be able to vibe on one accord.
Energy.
There's nothing like it. And and then you get to hear versions of your favorite song.
Right.
With no restrictions. Like, the artist is allowed to do something funky that you've never heard before, which is like once in a lifetime. Like Deborah Cox singing a Whitney Houston song live.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I was like,
her voice is
is never gonna happen again.
Yeah. Deborah's voice is so crazy. See,
so clear.
I've ever seen Sheila E. live. You know, so it's like,
neither have I.
Who would like her getting it in, that was crazy. You know, it was just, there were so many moments. And I went live a couple of times just so people could kind of feel it. But mostly I just wanted to enjoy it, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was that. And then the Brooklyn one was supposed to be last Thursday, but we were in the middle of Ida.
Right. And they rescheduled next weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's next Thursday. So I'll be there. Well, it's going to be a different vibe because the Brooklyn location is different. It's in Prospect Park. So it's not it's not a full amphitheater venue like Chastain Park in Atlanta or like the Hollywood Bowl. But so it's going to have a little bit more of a informal, because it's general admission, you know, whatever type vibe. But what I'm really excited about for New York is that Derek and his DJ partners, the Originals, which is a bunch of other New York DJs, Clark Kent, Stretch Armstrong, Rich Medina, Tony Touch, I think I'm forgetting one person, are going to be spinning together for the first time since before the pandemic. So that's going to be dope.
I so wish I could make it. That sounds, I got FOMO like a mug. It hasn't even happened
yet. It's going to be fun. Big Daddy Kane is going to be there. Like, it's going to be a different energy, but I think it's still going to be a really good time.
Really enjoyed the type of crowd that came out. It was very like, do you need a plastic cup for your wine also?
It was very family.
very family.
The CQ crew was like, they're a real thing.
They are really dedicated. We went to brunch the day before and they had on their CQ shirts and were like meeting and taking pictures.
Yeah, they had like their special shirts with their ats on the back. Mm-hmm. And representing like different cities, like apparently there are cities with chapters and all kind of shit. And
wow,
it's a lot. And I was staying at the Lowe's, which for those who aren't familiar with LA, the Lowe's is a hotel on Hollywood. Well, it's right off of Hollywood, but it's right down the street from the Bowl. And it's also the hotel that I would stay at in LA a lot for if I was in town for events, just because of where it's located. And also, it's attached to the Kodak Theater, which is where the Oscars are held.
Okay.
So it's a convenient location and a decent price point, and the rooms are decent, all that good shit. But it was also like, because it's so close to the Bowl, it was like club quarantine central. So the lobby was like the let out. On Friday night, I was like, holy fuck. And apparently, on Saturday night. And apparently they had been there Friday night, Saturday night. Derek had come over Friday night to take pictures. Like, they were serious about
it. A lot of folks came into town on Thursday, apparently. We came on Thursday, but we didn't do anything with that until at least Saturday.
There was a whole, like, I think there were a lot of, like, side parties and events and stuff that I just didn't know about because
we're not in the club.
Well, that's the thing.
We like, didn't pledge for
it. I'm not in club quarantine like that. Like, I'm literally like a friend of Derek's, but these are the people who be in club quarantine like every night for club quarantine after dark. Like, it's those people. They all, like, for real know each other. So there was like a whole lot of shit happening that I wasn't even privy to. That
was a whole community. I think I'm going to join. We'll see. Because it looked like it was a lot of aunties. I'm not going to lie.
That's why I said it gave me Essence Fest, but I'm not mad at that.
I'm not mad either. Because aunties, I mean, they know how to have fun. So
they know how to have a good time.
Yes.
So shout out to that. Sean was mad sad he didn't make it.
I know.
Especially we were all posting pics with Trav and shit.
Trav was really, really excited to meet y'all.
Yeah. So now Trav is officially part of the family. So that was dope. And I don't even know where Jeffrey is. He might be in Atlanta. He's someplace. I don't know.
He's in Atlanta right now. Yeah.
He's in Atlanta. He's somewhere. Okay. So shout outs. Do you have any shout outs?
I do. I got a couple of, anyway. So my favorite thing that came out of the quarantine last year was that press-on nail companies definitely stepped their game up because we all had to become DIY professionals, whatever. So right now I have a very cute set of nails on. I cut them down a little bit just because I was wearing rubber gloves. Y'all can go to her
Twitter. So Almondy, she posted a picture of it. It's a really good set.
I did. I love them. They were $7.88 at the Walmart. Shout out to press-on nails. I had on a set when I met you two at the when I saw you at the Hollywood Bowl.
Okay.
And those made me very excited. Speaking of Hollywood Bowl, I want to give a huge shout out to Jeff, who thought that I had drawn like a couple of little stars with eyeliner around my right eye. Because I had like a random bump right there when we went to Hollywood Bowl.
That's creative.
He asked me if I had a real tattoo on my face. And I was
nobody
like,
would do
about
that
me?
Jeff. Jeff, who, by the way, had got his hair platinum.
Jeff is platinum blonde right
nigga,
now, too.
You're so lucky I didn't actually see you in person because I didn't actually see Jeff. I was about to my way to Jeff, and I didn't make it over there. But, yeah, Jeff.
So this is my first time meeting him, so shout out to Jeff. But the, like, youthful, like, hot nigga energy you get from Jeff
so real.
Radiates from the 6 feet away.
Yes.
Like
it's really real with him.
Like, and then he took the hat off, and I was like, oh, and you're blonde. This is fantastic. So shout out to Jeff. Super fun. We had such a good time in L.A. Like, I can't even say it all on the podcast, but it was just so nice to like not have to be a mom for about a week.
Right.
And just like run around LA with my boyfriend. It was cute.
With your boyfriend. I love that. And they really have boyfriend girlfriend energy. It's very cute. Y'all are very cute.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, y'all
are very cute. We're a little annoying when we get to be alone together, but it was nice.
I didn't mind. I don't have to be around y'all all the time. I can take it. I have a shout out. I want to give a massive shout out to Chloe fucking Bailey.
Yes.
of the sister duo Hallie and Chloe, who started as like the cute little girls who were kind of vibey and maybe a little earthy, who Beyonce signed several years ago now. It's been quite some time.
Yeah.
But like I didn't really dig their music. It was a little too whatever. I mean, but also they were young. I was like, this ain't about me. It's whatever. I think that being cast on Grown-ish was the best thing that could have happened for their brand because it allowed us to start seeing their personalities and how they vary. And Chloe, who is the older of the two and the thicker of the two, and this is actually relevant, because she and Hallie have completely different body types. Hallie's very slim.
Mm-hmm.
Always very athletic. And
very muscular and shapely, yeah.
Yeah, she has like a track girl body. Chloe, who is the older, you've been able to see over the past couple of years, like, you could tell she was itching. Like, the minute they tell me I can go, I'm fucking going. Like, you could tell.
When I turned 21, like, I'm out here.
Woo, yeah. Like, you could tell. Like, she was like, I want to bounce this shit so hard. I want to drop it so bad. Like, you could see the energy, like, contained. You could tell. Chloe, as soon as she could go, she was going. And she's been giving, like, the last album they put out as a duo last summer.
Ungodly Hour.
Yeah, she was giving us, they had this little song, Do It, which I really liked. She was giving us a lot of energy in the video. I was like, Chloe, ready. She's ready. She's ready. Yes.
And then a few clips of the performances you see, because she gets to do things on stage that they wouldn't necessarily release in a sexual way. Yeah.
And then, and she's been showing us through socials, and she's been going through a year of a lot of criticism because people want them to be these role models for little girls. She's a grown woman. Like, people age, right? Mm-hmm. People get older. Just because, you know, Brandy and Monica didn't take a similar trajectory doesn't mean that, like, and this is the thing, when you're a kid singer, not that Chloe and Halle were kid singers, but they were teenage singers. Fans.
They were also kid singers.
I guess, yeah, okay, kid singers.
Yeah, well, Chloe played a young Beyonce in the Fighting Temptations. Yeah.
Beyonce. But fans don't want to let you grow up. And we tend to see the struggle more on the pop side because they straight rebel and break out. I think of, what's her name? Miley Cyrus, right? Having to go from Hannah Montana to... She went straight ratchet.
If we have to make a comparison.
I'm just saying, that's one that comes to mind because what she ended up doing was having to almost go directly in the opposite direction because she couldn't just do a natural progression. On our side, it's been a struggle. Like, Shanice didn't want to go from being like a kid singer to like a sexy adult singer. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's been really hard. And even it's a poignant topic because Aaliyah's self-titled album is on streaming finally. As of today, it's been 20 years. And to look at those videos from that era, we saw Aaliyah coming into a grown womaness, right? Like, she saw legs for the first time in the Resolution video. Aaliyah never showed her legs. She looked like an adult. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was no teenager in her. Like, she was a woman. Right. And but with Chloe... Chloe clearly said, let me break this down so it can forever and consistently be broke. She was like, I'm not giving y'all no ambiguity. I want to make it very clear what I'm about to be. The Have Mercy video.
Bruh.
I have not seen it. I watched this shit at 5 in the morning till 6 in the morning, like on the loop.
I've seen that video no less than 15 times.
Same.
Since I woke up today. Crazy. More amazing every time.
I usually do not care what the kids are doing, but that shit there, oh my God.
I'm into it. The song is very short. She's giving us a little rapping. It's clearly a twerk anthem. We're not supposed to take it extremely seriously.
Nope.
There's cute boys in the bed, cute girls. She's giving us looks, choreography, very, very sexy, whole lot of ass.
It's
I'm
very
not mad
sexy.
At any part of it.
Nope, it's very sexy and it's very sexual. Like, it's not
very
even
sexual.
Just like sexy. It's sexual. Like,
I think the point had to be made that like that Disney shit is over there with
over
the 20-year-old.
That's my sister.
This is who I
am doing this shit. Like, there's one dress she has on where I'm like, is a titty gonna fall out? And I think that's on purpose. Like, you don't know. She's cussing.
She licked the statue, and I was like, "Oh, we're there." Okay,
like cool. You know, it's at one point like she grabs her own neck as though to like implicate like a little like S&M. There's a lot. There's a lot going on. I'm with all of it. Every last fucking piece of it. I'm not mad. She was like, "Fuck subtlety. I'm not doing none of that shit." I'm making. And Miss Tina is in it almost just to Miss say. Tina and there's a mama figure. Y'all can kiss my ass. She's in it, like, just briefly. Jeff said that he feels like the quote-unquote they were trying to make her too much like Beyonce. This is Chloe.
This is absolutely Chloe.
There's definitely the B influence. There's definitely
of course. Up but who, what girl is out right now that is not influenced by B?
Right. It's no, it's if anything, she's getting it the closest that anybody else has gotten it.
Right? Oh, for sure. It was immediate comparison.
In terms of self-possession. And that's what really it was. It wasn't even so much about the looks and the video concept. Her fucking attitude. Like,
yes,
the face she's giving you, the confidence that she's giving you. Like, that performance is very, like, there's nothing timid in that. There's
nothing at all. I feel like it's exactly who she is. And the responses from, you know, people who have brains like me and you have been positive and loving it. Right. For that reason, we feel the authenticity in it. It's right. Nothing fake about it. And also, like, shout out to Parkwood for actually, like,
taking time to
doing A&R, I guess, and developing those ladies, because she signed them years and years and years ago. And we didn't hear from them until The Kids Are All Right. And when they came out with The Kids Are All Right, it was like, boom, grown-ish. We're going to promote this album. I'm going to put you on the Formation World Tour. Like, they really had time to grow into their own. And now they're going, you know, somewhat separate directions. And it makes sense.
Figure out what they were going to do. They had time to grow, figure out what they were going to do, who they wanted to be. Yeah. Find individual sounds, develop distinct personalities, because I think some of us even thought they were like twins when they first came out, right? Like, develop.
Right. And they play twins on the show, so.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's just been, and you know, if they had been signed directly to a major, I don't know if they would have been given that time, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of do what they do. And they've always been press darlings, even when the music wasn't hitting big time. They've always been press darlings, but I don't know that they would have been given this time to like develop. But Chloe is about to be a fucking star. And
already
I'm putting my money on that. And she's performing this weekend at the VMAs, and now I gotta watch the VMAs.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna watch, but now I'm like, she's gonna kill.
I need to see the first performance of this in real time.
Yes.
In person. Ivy apparently does too. Shout out to you, Chloe. I also wanted to ask you about, you know, watching people rediscover Aaliyah for me has been really interesting. Some folks hearing, you know, some deep cuts for the first time, or living with her album top to bottom for the first time, or just going back to it. And even for myself, going back to all her material, it's been really amazing to me how current it all still sounds and how relevant she still feels. What are your thoughts on that? Like, were you a big Aaliyah fan back in the day?
I was. I mean, I had the Swoop Bang and everything. This was the late 90s, early aughts. So that's high school for me, which means
you're most impressionable. Yeah.
I was super impressionable. I wanted to wear the Tommy boxers outside of my baggy jeans. And my mom was like, absolutely not. But, you know, you get the sports bra, you try to mimic some of those looks as best you can. Like, she was it when I was that age. And when she passed, it affected me profoundly. I mean, for the 8 days that I could breathe before September 11th happened. But it was, she was iconic. And I think we all knew she was iconic when she came out, that this was like a special kind of talent. And everything she was putting out felt, how can I describe this? Like, not super grown music, which we had a lot of at the time, but also not super young and poppy, like Brandy's first album. It felt like, you know, teenager, a little bit naughty, a little bit, you know what I mean? The stuff we were actually saying to our friends
versus our parents. Read kind of, I don't want to say grown, because when we say grown, a lot of times, a lot of times we say an artist feels grown. What we mean is we think they're doing material that's too advanced for them. She felt mature. She read mature, and she felt mature, which is why I think we didn't even really put her in the same categories as like Brandy and Monica, because she just didn't feel like she belonged there.
It felt like she wasn't even performing. Like, there wasn't a stage persona for her. It just felt like who she was.
It felt very effortless. And even now, like, I was looking at for the Aaliyah album, the Rock the Boat video gets the most attention for obvious reasons, but what the hell's going on outside? Sorry, but the More Than a Woman and Resolution videos are fucking ridiculous. Like
More than a woman was a visual that like I can still recall in my mind, realizing that she was inside of the motorcycle dancing.
Yes!
This is the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life, and I want every part of it. Like, what is that makeup?
And she got red tips
on the hair. Yeah, you could see her face, because of course there was a rumor that she didn't have an eye or something.
These are all
the rumors that somehow got around to everybody before social media. Like,
this is amazing.
Sierra,
but yes, that was
and
the
Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah.
How did we play telephone like that? But I digress. Anyway. So revisiting the album from 20, 25 years ago, I have not yet. I don't know why. I think I just don't have time and I've been listening to other stuff. But I'm excited to listen again with fresh ears. Of course, everything that Missy and Tim do still sounds like it was made for today regardless. Is this the album that they didn't have as much input on?
Them did. Missy didn't. This album was mostly written. Missy wrote one song on the album, which I think was I Care For You, which had been a holdover from, actually was supposed to go on the One in a Million album. But Static Major, who was part of the Super Friends Collective, who died in 94? Oh, eight?
I remember that happening.
I don't know why. The dates 08 and 14 are both in my head simultaneously. One of those years he passed. Whenever Wayne's Lollipop came out, that was the year he died because he wrote that song. But Static wrote most of the album, but Tim still produced the majority of it. Or at least the singles that we think of. But yeah, I just at the time. Because you were in high school, I was already grown and working in the entertainment industry, which is scary. But at the time,
What year was it?
She died in 2001.
Oh, she died in 2001. No, I was out of high school. But
And the album came out in 2001.
This album?
This one did, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it did. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of One in a Million.
One in a Million. Yeah, One in a Million was 97.
Right.
But at the time, I compared that loss or that new, like the loss that we felt at that news to when we heard that Chadwick Boseman died. And now Ivy is just kind of
like help that, you, girl. My goodness.
Just kind of like that feeling of Jesus, like he's just getting started. Imagine how much to give us. He's so young, he's so talented. It's really like a selfish loss, honestly. And that was the feeling with her. Oh, and that actually reminds me, I can't believe I forgot this. And I hate this transition sentence, but while we're speaking of loss of great talent, we need to acknowledge the passing of Michael K. Williams, who
devastating.
Known as Omar on The Wire, Chucky White on Boardwalk Empire, more recently in
Montrose
in
Lovecraft Country.
One of the finest character actors of our generation.
It cannot be overstated just how talented that man was.
Just incredible the way he embodies pain and depth, layers. To the people that he portrays. He also was in this limited series that I think I talked about on the pod, but I really don't know that a lot of people have seen it. And it's really amazing. It's called, it's an HBO limited series called The Night Of. And it's about this kid of Indian descent, if I'm not mistaken, who gets picked up for a murder. And in the time that he's in Rikers, like totally innocent, never done anything wrong, never been in trouble. But just in the time he's in Rikers waiting for trial, basically becomes criminalized just because that's what he has to survive in Rikers. Right. Mm-hmm. And Michael K. Williams plays the character who kind of takes him under his wing and trains him up while he's inside. But it's a very scary thing about what that time what just institutionalization can do to you, even if you're innocent. And I was watching.
I think, I was going to say, I think Wendell Pierce said it best. There's a clip of him kind of giving Michael K. Williams his flowers kind of on a red carpet in an interview, saying that he kind of breathes life and humanity into
yes.
men, lives of men who you would normally pass by.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect way to say it. Yeah.
It's that, you know, thinking, I'm sure that the writers of The Wire did not pour this much depth into Omar Little as a character until Mike K. Williams got there. And I don't mean that to disparage the writers in any way, but just that portraying that kind of that self-loathing, almost queerness, but then that boldness at the same time. There were so many layers to that character, which is why I think, you know, there was nobody to root for in The Wire,
yeah.
but you rooted for Omar, who was this criminal.
Who
was absolutely a villain to every protagonist on the show.
I think the same about Chalky White, right? Like, Chalky, same thing. He's a criminal.
I did not watch Boardwalk Empire just because there are some really, really tough scenes in the first couple episodes of a woman being abused that I just could not get past to get through it. I wanted to be there, but I just could not keep going with that show. But
I can understand it. And I think Chalky maybe doesn't show up until season 2 or 3. I can't remember. I don't think he shows up from season 1. But the thing about, so Chalky White is, you know, first of all, Boardwalk Empire is set in the 20s. It's Prohibition. It's Atlantic City. So Chalky's a Negro bootlegger, obviously. And, you know, does things not only in Atlantic City, but has connections going through to Harlem. And he starts out as like this minor character, but there's like a season where we're following his whole life too, right? Like his money has enabled him to, like, he's damn near illiterate, you know, he's not educated, whatever, but he's married to a light-skinned woman who clearly is well-bred. Their kids go to private school, you know, and are going to like esteemed colleges. They have a lovely home, you know, like that whole, it's this very crazy duality of his life, you know? And he's just this really, by the end of it, like he's one of your favorite characters of the series, of a series of dynamic character actors. So, I don't know if this is the official report yet, but it's believed to be an overdose. The guess is that he had a storied and documented history of drug use and abuse, even when he was on The Wire, actually. And the prevalent thought right now is that something was laced with fentanyl and got him.
There was another party at the same time where they had 4 overdoses the same night that okay Williams passed, where 3 of those people passed and 1 is on life support now. So there's a lot of fentanyl out there, which is terrifying.
It's crazy because the thing is, a friend of mine texted me and she was like, you know, I know people still do drugs. She was like, but it still surprises me when somebody overdoses. I was like, he may not have even, I said, so like more people still use recreationally than I think anybody really realizes. And he may not even have been like on a bender, but the fentanyl is just.
The amount of that needed to take you out is so minuscule and so tiny that even if you like opened up a blunt and really inspected your weed, you still would see it.
Right.
Or still would not see it. That's how little that you need. So God bless. I hope that. I mean, I don't know. I hope that's not what happens. But either way, he's not with us.
He's not with us. And it's tragic.
It's so tragic.
Because I don't think it was a situation like X where he was kind of like, I can go. You know what I mean?
Right. If you look at his Twitter feed, it's like, I'm so excited to be working with you next year.
Stuff on deck. And the thing that people have also been discovering about him, which New Yorkers knew, because first of all, Michael K. Williams was so from Brooklyn, from Brooklyn Projects, Vanderveer, I think it's called, in East Brooklyn. And was heavy, heavy on the club scene before he became an actor. He was a club kid, house head, which is why he and a lot of people have seen that he and Queen Latifah have known each other since they were teenagers. That's because Lia's a househead. So they be like at the garage and all these clubs, you know, house clubs.
And also why part of the reason he felt so comfortable in Baltimore during shootings, because the Baltimore club and house scene is ginormous. Literally every black club you go into in Baltimore at midnight, it changes to all house music.
The house music, right.
For sure.
So he was comfortable there. And he became, and also apparently he was, which I didn't know, he was a member of one of the ballroom houses, House Ebony. So he was in the ballroom scene.
Oh, wow.
He was in the ballroom scene. And, you know, people have had questions about his queerness. The fact of the matter is, whether he was, whether he wasn't, he never addressed it to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he clearly at least understood the community and you know, was affiliated with the community enough to give these really complex portrayals. I don't think it really matters if he was or wasn't. But yeah, he was.
I don't think so either. It's also none of my business.
Right. So he was part of a house at one point.
Give me the hundred of it.
And... oh my goodness. Then he became a dancer. Yes, Ivy.
Uh-huh.
He became a dancer and choreographer. So he toured with Madonna, George Michael, and he choreographed Crystal Waters' 100% Real Love video, which you'll see. I think people have been posting it. I know I posted it.
So yeah, just, I saw it.
The man had a lot of life, and he always went back to community. He went back to Baltimore, and he was went back to Brooklyn. He advocated for his nephew who had been locked up for a really long time. And so he was advocating for criminal reform. Like he walked the talk.
Yeah.
He, like all these worlds he stepped into, he also was still like part of those worlds. He didn't just want to portray them. He wanted to actually represent them properly and do what he could to make them better.
Yeah. I get so upset because people like Lindsey Graham are allowed to live until they're 1,000, but
100 million years old.
This someone with so much love inside of them, and it's like bursting at the seams,
right?
And they, you know, are so tormented in this life that it has to end early. That shit just sucks. He had so much more to give, and I was right here, ready to receive it.
Ready, so. And again, it's that thing, is a kind of jealous feeling of, damn, I'm not gonna see what else he had to do. You know, what else he was gonna do for us. I want to get into to speak like Jeffrey. I want to. Oh, I've on behalf of Jeff, I gotta acknowledge, because he would be talking about it. I'm not gonna give it nearly as much airtime, that Drake dropped Certified Lover Boy last week. And Jeff says it's his seminal album. I'm being 100. I haven't fucking listened to it, with the exception of listen to TSU. Because here's my thing with Drake. I've never been a huge Drake fan. Like, I like him.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to him. He does what he does really fucking well. He knows his audience, and he knows his pocket, and he knows how to stay culturally relevant. Like, he's excellent at it.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of manufacturing for me. And I don't actually think Drake has ever really elevated his game. I think he's very consistent.
Exactly. This is what I say about Drake all the time, is that at one point in my life, I was a huge fan when I could relate to the music. Yeah. I have grown in a certain direction where it no longer relates to me.
Right.
And he's saying the same shit and kind of the same formula is there. So after a while, that gets a little boring for me.
Yeah, he raps in text and IG captions, which is great. Again, the reason he's been the, you know, top artist, not even just rapper, but the top artist of the last several years, and one of the top 10 artists of the last decade, is because he is the perfect artist for the streaming age and for the social media age. Perfect.
Absolutely.
I just think he could go deeper if he wanted to, and he doesn't, right?
I agree.
So, but, you know, again, that's not for me to say. It works for him right now, whatever. And Jeff is like, at this point, you got to put him in the GOAT conversation because his run is crazy. And that's where you got to kind of debate whether GOAT is about artistry or numbers, right? Like, it's a different
comparing artists from different eras, or anyone from a different era, is a conversation that I personally cannot participate in. And here's why.
Right.
So people like to say that, like, or compare like Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali, right? They were into the boxing world at very different times.
Right.
And they're greatest at very different times. So when Muhammad Ali was in the ring, you had people training to beat Muhammad Ali to get to that level. That those little micro changes in everybody's training changes boxing altogether.
Right.
So by the time Mike Tyson gets there and he's, you know, bringing out something new and people are training to
beat
his standard, then Muhammad Ali is already in him.
Right, so it's impossible
to put together.
Like Jordan and LeBron.
Exactly that. The game changed because Jordan was so good. We now have to train around him. We have to get more muscular. We have to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that changes the entire league. So by the time LeBron is in, here we are with a brand new environment to now compare. What are you surprising about, girl? So I say all that to say,
I get it. It's hard to talk about
Jay-Z and Drake, two completely different worlds, completely different times of entry into the game, and something you literally cannot compare because they're both still rapping.
Right. Exactly. And that's the other thing, right? Like, we're trying to compare him to people who are still in the game, but you also can't do. The game is continuing to change. And there are other artists who are out here who are doing what Drake does. So I say all that to say, the one thing I did get into, Drake has a track called TSU. It's about halfway, this like, I think track 8 or something. And there was a lot of controversy because people were talking about the fact that Dirty Rob, Robert Kelly, has a songwriting credit on the album.
Right.
But the funny thing about that was nobody could even figure out what the fuck it was for, because there's no sonically distinguishable R. Kelly anything there. It turns out that the intro of TSU is a sample of OG Ron C, who was a Houston DJ with Swisha House, one of his mixtapes from like 2013, an interlude of him talking over a Chopped and Screwed thunderstorm. That thunderstorm is the beginning of Half on a Baby. There's no
Jesus.
There's no notes. There's no music. There's no lyrics. There's no melody. There's no nothing. In fact, the only reason they probably had to credit Kells is because UMGs got hit with a really big lawsuit for another artist. So they were probably just like, you know, covering
their ass.
Like sample inception. It wasn't. Because people were like, how could you think we're going to use this R. Kelly sample? And how? And I kept saying to people, did you listen to it? Because I was ready to be mad. And then I listened to it and I was like, after listening to it, I was like, I can't really be mad. But then after I realized, because I was also like, because I heard the Swisha House reference and I was like, is this one a Swisha House thing? And then when somebody confirmed that it was a Swisha House sample from 2013, I know exactly what happened. What happened was BA was like, we need to know who he sampled, because it's a mixtape also. It's not like Ron C would have credited R. Kelly on the mixtape because he wouldn't have to clear shit. And 40 Ounce came out and said that one of his producers came out and said that it was really important for them to keep Ron C. And there was nothing, like I said, there was nothing of R. Kelly specifically in it sonically, right?
It's just a thunderstorm.
It's just a thunderstorm. So, but you know, people like, but he's all credited on the album. And my thing was like, how many of y'all really still look at album credits? Y'all wouldn't have known if this hadn't become a thing. And the thing about credits and label copy that I wanted to kind of emphasize to people is like, when you're routed this stuff, because they were like, how did nobody flag this? Why would legal flag this? I was like, because it's not illegal. Why wouldn't legal flag it? Because it's not illegal. What are you talking about? So legal's not PR. I was like, and also,
I wanted to ask you guys this on the show. It's like, what does that mean in terms of like compensation from this?
My thing is whatever R. Kelly, because I don't know if R. Kelly can take credit for writing a fucking thunderstorm, right? It's a thunderstorm. They have to credit him because it was on his album, right? Yeah. But like, because it's the exact sound clip from his album. But the nigga didn't write a thunderstorm, right? So, and it's a very small piece of music. It's a very small piece of content, audio, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Whatever he would get paid would be nominal. That said, he currently has judgments against him so that he's not getting any revenue from any of his publishing anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But people are like, well, it sets a bad precedent to have his name on your credits. The thing about Kells is that Kells has such a large body of work. It's impossible to think that we are never again in the history of black music going to have a R. Kelly sample.
Oh, it's for sure.
It's impossible. And there are artists who've already had it. You know why you didn't know? Because y'all niggas don't read the fucking credit. And like, but the other thing is that the way credits are routed internally to teams still looks more like what credits look like in your CD books, right? So you have first initial, last name, publishing info, you know, admin info. Like it's a lot. There are eight writers credited on this TSU song. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it on Spotify, you're seeing a double space list of just like eight names. So it's very easy to go straight to like the R. Kelly. What people are seeing internally on the back end is like a big chunk of like text that looks like a paragraph with all this other stuff on it. So that's eight names on one song, one of 21 songs. So R. Kelly is one of, there's probably 75 to 100 writers total credited on this album, all in. It's 21 tracks, right? He's one of many. So I'm also like, it's not like his name is looming at the top. R. Kelly's not going to win a Grammy for this fucking album. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not not the thing people are making it to be. And I get it. Like, stand with the victims, et cetera. I completely understand that. But this was not a conscious choice to support R. Kelly. If anything, it was like, all right, fuck, we gotta license this / clear it with R. Kelly. We gotta give him credit for it. Mm-hmm. But it's more important. It was important for them to have that Ron C. clip, that Houston Swisher House clip. Right. Album, and people aren't even paying attention to that, because a lot of the people who are most mad about it honestly haven't listened. Like I said, I was ready to be mad, especially when they said it was sample, especially when I found it was Half on a Baby, because at first I wasn't going to listen. And you know, you hear that Drake sampled Half on a Baby, and just knowing how Drake is, you're already thinking it's going to be something really blatant and ridiculous. And when I went and listened to it, I was like, yeah, I can't be mad at this. So
I was more concerned that he make sure he credits those cheerleaders on the beat on 7 a.m. on Bridal Path than anything else.
Right.
That was my concern. That's the one song on the album that I, that one and like Fountains with Thames, who was on the Song of the Summer. What's it?
So.
Oh my gosh, I really went blank. WizKid, who did the that's Tim's voice. So I really like the other song that she's on, but I digress.
I'm trying to remember the name of that song. That song actually apparently
Essence.
That song is apparently the first song by a Nigerian artist to go number one at R&B radio. So shout out to them.
Wow, shout out to them.
Yeah, that just happened last week. And shout out to the RCA crew, who are also friends to the show.
Hi.
Yeah, so Drake, I feel like to say Drake has more problematic shit going on than that fucking sample. But in Jeff's absence, I wanted to bring the album, although that's probably not the way he wanted it brought up.
Not at all.
There's also been like some scandals still ongoing with Kanye. The funny thing about Donda is that I really don't want to hear anybody talking about the album itself. Everybody's talking about shit around the album. So now
I haven't listened to it. I can't bring myself to listen to it.
I listened to that bullshit. But now it's like who he left on, who he left off. You know, a Dre verse, which nobody gets a Dre verse. Nobody gets a Dre verse. Dre don't get nobody verses no more. So he got a Dre verse, and it was used differently than Andre thought. So now it's like Andre controversy, Andre 3000 controversy. And now all heads are turned towards Kendrick, who apparently is about to drop at any minute. So
I I mean, God bless. None of that is for me.
I love it.
I really hope, you know, I've been listening to, besides Mercy by Chloe, I've been on my Sarah Bareilles this week.
Not just Sarah Bareilles. God damn.
I love Sarah Bareilles. And I don't know why it didn't dawn on me before, but Love Song is a diss record to a record company, which makes me love it even more. So I went back. I was like, ooh, let me just listen to this song. And since then, my Spotify has been deep into Sarah Bareilles' territory.
The idea of you bouncing around the house to write you a love song.
As for it, it's me one.
Okay, yeah. Very funny.
It's jams. She is my favorite songwriter, and I do not care who knows it. Miss Sarah, if any of you or any of your people are listening to this,
wasn't there a Broadway play by Sarah about Sarah? Did you go to it?
It's not about her, but she did. She's one of the writers, and she did all the music for the show Waitress. And it's the first one that's back on Broadway full time since the shutdown. So
going?
No. I don't like musicals. I would never do that.
That's a whole other convo. And you know what? I'll wait for Sean and Jeff to come back to have a musical convo because they're going to be right with your ass on it. I already know it.
Not a huge fan of musicals, but I love her. So peace to Sarah Bareilles.
Okay. Speaking of going into theaters, something that Jeffrey would also want me to bring up. Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. Marvel has launched a new franchise in the MCU based on
this
one
of phase four of the MCU that's coming.
Phase four of the MCU. And with the death of Iron Man, it really did wrap up a lot of those. I mean, not that the other Avenger plot lines won't keep going in some way, but, you know, they've had to shift now to, had to shift their focus.
Now they're not focused on one timeline, which is huge. Which opens the door for
a lot of things.
So much shit.
But it's going to be interesting because Marvel being Marvel, they always interweave everything back together in the most seamless way, which is a really beautiful and brilliant thing, which DC has never been able to fucking do ever.
DC's so trash. Ever. With that.
They're awful at continuity. Terrible. I don't understand how, after watching Marvel dominate for so long, they still haven't gotten that shit right. But anyway. We have a new Spider-Man coming.
Very passionate about that.
I am, because I'm like, how do you not see the game? Like, you see the game. Fans are very clear that one of the things we love most about the MCU is the continuity of it. That shit connects. It all connects. And
how are you fumbling the bag on Superman?
Everything. They go off canon so much. Like, I'm so happy that Spider-Man came back to Marvel. Like, I'm so happy. Yes. Like, I'm so happy that Sony had to give that shit up. Like, it's oh my God. Anyway, so we have
the Spider-Man trailer.
Awesome. It's good. We have Spider-Man coming. We have the Eternals coming. And Shang-Chi, which to me came out of the blue. It was not on my radar.
It was very periphery. But so
it was apparently for a very long time one of their marginal titles. And developed a kind of cult following over some years. But I have seen it in theaters twice this week. I went on Monday. I went assigned seating only, AMC theaters, so that I could see how full the theater was before I went. So each theater I went to was a third or less full. And you know, I had space around me and who I went with had space around us. So I saw it the first time in 3D and then I saw it in IMAX. It is one of the best Marvel origin stories I've ever seen.
Really? Now, Marvel does the origin story very well. So that's a loaded statement.
It's amazing. And also it's the fact that it's a kung fu flick. So like, so there is actually Mandarin with subtitles. There's English too, but there's Mandarin with subtitles. The fight scenes are amazing. Michelle Yu is in it. Crouch of Tiger. Okay. Like it's dope. Like I'm almost definitely gonna see it a third time at some point. It's very dope.
We know Trav saw it. He said it was very, very good. And what we expect from an origin story, but very rich with culture and
very that
different something new and fresh that we haven't seen in a little bit. So
I haven't really tapped into how the Asian community is talking about this yet. Chinese specifically, because this is set in it's a Chinese origin story, but there is so much cultural there are so many cultural references here from him. Awkwafina is in it, which is a whole nother conversation, but she's like the best friend of Shang-Chi. So from him going,
is she talking with the accent in this one?
No, she's just being an Americanized Chinese girl. So because they're based in San Francisco, because you know it's a very large Asian community there, period. And from him going to her family's house and him, you know, speaking Chinese better than she does, and him like speaking to her family in Chinese while she speaks to them in English, and you know, from little meal traditions and house traditions to a whole conversation about Chinese names being sacred. It, like, there's a lot. So I just wonder if it's resonant with them, like in the way certain parts of Black Panther was for us. And I need to tap in and see what conversation the Asian community is having about it, because it feels like it was done with a lot of care. It feels like it was
as not. Marvel tends to do.
As Marvel tends to do,
That's why we like them so much, because they do their best to really honor the culture that they're trying to portray on screen, which we cannot say for DC, because their shit is so mixed up and all over the place. We don't know what they're trying to portray.
We don't know what the fuck they're trying to do. DC is just trying to make a box office dollar, which is the problem. They don't think about it. They don't think about it in terms of story. I feel like they think of each movie as a separate property, and that's the exact problem. They don't think of.
But they see what Marvel is doing, and they're trying to be a universe, but they're not. It's not curling all the way over. They're not giving it the time and attention it deserves. So
DC, get your shit together, because it's actually not hard. It just requires a much higher level of planning and cohesion. That's the thing. And you can't necessarily turn writers over every 10 seconds. That's the other part. The other dope thing about Shang-Chi, if I'm not mistaken, was it? No, The Eternals, I think, is going to be directed by a woman. I need to look into that. All right. We're going to go an hour. I'm going to wrap it. Oh, we got to do TV real quick. I want to give a shout out to... I'm just going to run down the list, my must list right now. Non-Perfect Sex has me fucked up on Hulu. Like, I'm checking Hulu on Tuesday.
I'm so behind. Before we went to LA, I watched the first three episodes, and I haven't been back. I just have not.
Actually, you should just mix. I think there's either one more episode or two more episodes, but Hulu is doing, it might not even be new. Maybe Hulu's always done this and I haven't been paying attention. No, they haven't. It's new-ish. They'll give you two or three episodes, new-ish, because I think it might have started like in 20 or 19. They'll give you two or three episodes at once.
It's like a
drug deal. They'll give you two or three at once, and then you got to come back weekly for the rest. It's some drug dealer shit.
It's very effective.
It works. It's super effective. Yeah. And watching Non-Perfect Strangers got me into Only Murders in the Building, which is also on Hulu. It's Martin Short, Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, about three New Yorkers who live in, there's a really famous building in New York called the Dakota. It's not that, but it's similar. You can tell it's supposed to be a similar, like a historic building in New York. And one of the neighbors apparently commits suicide. They think he was murdered. They're all true crime podcast aficionados, so they're trying to like do this true crime podcast about this murder in the building, and watching it unfold and how they play off of each other, everything. It's fun. It's a fun show. It's on episode 4 or 5, and then fortunately, because I was watching Hulu, I found out that the Wu-Tang and American Saga is back for season 2.
I didn't see that was coming back.
But y'all,
I didn't watch season 1 though.
You should. You really should. If y'all haven't watched season 1 of Wu-Tang and American Saga, I cannot recommend it enough. It's so well casted. It's so well done. It's so fucking authentic. Like, those of y'all who are watching Raising Kanan, the Power Book joint or K-9 or whatever his name is. People keep talking about how like authentic it is to the time period. I promise you, watch Wu season one. It's amazing. And season one ended just as, because season one is their legit origin story from like when they went, when some of them wasn't fucking with each other to how they came together to even do a demo, right? And like Divine, RZA's brother getting out of prison, like all of this. And, you know, RZA like stepping his production skills up, RZA getting a solo deal that not, solo singles deal that not working out, like all of that, them getting their names, everything. And it ended right as they're all like frustrated and kind of going back to figure out an alternate path and kind of giving up on the idea of the music thing. And I want to say like the last scene of the last episode was Steve Rifkin leaving a message. Like, I heard your demo. I want to talk to y'all, whatever. So we're picking up season two, like them getting their deal and becoming Wu for real and like releasing Enter the 36 and all of that.
I think one of the reasons I didn't watch it was just there was so much content at the time.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And we had just watched, there was something else with Wu-Tang that was on. Okay,
that documentary.
Yes, and then there's two TV shows that happened simultaneously. This one on Hulu, and there was like another one. And I believe maybe the other one was terrible, or people didn't like the casting in the other one.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that one, but there was a Mics and Men doc that preceded this that was the Wu-Tang doc, but I liked that, so maybe it wasn't
I really liked that. There was something, I don't know, anyway. Okay. I've never got around to finding the good one or the good part. And, right. Like, getting down to it, but it's on my list. One of my favorite young actors is in that, the teenage Sharon from Moonlight. I can never remember his name.
Oh, yeah, he plays RZA.
Oh, that's great.
He plays Davies plays Method Man, and I mean, like, you forget it's not Method Man. Davies.
I love all things.
Davies Method and Man. Meth might need to have a conversation because I'm just saying.
Like, if we could just insert everywhere that people like to put Common in this acting thing, we could just insert Meth into those roles. Like,
people using Common like parsley, I don't really understand. He's not good. Listen.
Not good.
It's beautiful to look at, but as soon as he opens his mouth, like, nah, yes. Just.
I really love the.
Meth is right here. And actually, like, has proven himself to be a really good character actor.
He's really good.
And he's fine. Like.
And funny. And tell what he needs to be.
And, like, yes. Just put him there. Just call his rep, please. Common and shit. We're Common. We don't need any more Common. We don't need no more Common. Nothing.
We don't need any more deadpan delivery of whatever script he was reading. It's not good.
It almost never elevates anything. Anyway, okay. So Wu's back.
I started that. I'm sorry, y'all.
No, it's fine. I feel like there was something else that I've been watching or was going to watch, but it must not be that crucial. But what you got?
So, of course, I saw the Put a Ring on It reunion, which was a fucking mess. And me and Jack need to talk about own shows anyway.
Y'all also going to need to talk about the Real Housewives. You got to say peace to Greg Leakes.
Peace to Greg Leakes, the only man in that universe who had the power to bring all of them back together. Seriously. For that. I don't want to call it a memorial. I think it was like a celebration of life or something.
Yeah, it was a celebration of life.
Adra and Kenya and Portia and Kim Zolciak all in the same room.
Kim and her husband came? Like, that was amazing to me.
Yeah, that is.
Like, wow.
Apollo. In the same room with all them folks, Peter and Cynthia, and like that was a
lot. So Greg Leakes transitioned. I feel like, you know, I think it was planned. He lost his long and hard fought battle with cancer last week.
His cancer had come back again.
Yeah, it had come back and aggressively. And I think that it sounded to me like a situation of Greg being in hospice care. And for his own comfort, them realizing that, you know, the time was coming, because they do kind of prepare you. They can usually tell you within a couple of days, actually, when your loved one's in hospice of what you're looking like. And, you know, Nene's been posting a lot. I saw an original wedding of Nene, a picture of Nene and Greg, which I had never seen before, and she just looks so young. And
I haven't seen that. I'll have to look at her Instagram.
I'll send it to the group chat. But I just want to acknowledge that, you know, Greg was, I would argue, probably the most level-headed person on that whole damn show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe Todd-ish. No, Todd.
No, Todd.
Never mind. Yeah. I think Greg was the most level-headed person on the show. And felt like, you know, he just felt like a good dude. I don't know him from Adam.
I
don't know people who knew Greg, but he felt like a good dude. He felt like a good dude. And Lord, he was the only thing that kept Nene remotely anchored. So who knows what's about to happen.
I was just about to say, my heart goes out to that family, especially his children. And I really hope they have all mended those issues that we saw play out on the show. But my heart breaks for Nene. Like, nobody has been in her corner like Greg has been for her entire life. So, pretty much her adult life. So I hope that...
I would say her entire life, because her father wasn't in her life. And she had a weird relationship with her mom. So I think he was really like an anchor for her.
It just, you know, it just felt like real love. Like, whatever they've gone through before, any couple that's going to divorce and then find their way back together and get remarried.
I always believed the divorce was for the sole purpose of getting remarried. But that's me. But because I did always believe
you need a bigger ring.
Yeah.
That's gotta be hard. No matter how much you prepare for a loved one to go, even as sick as they are, there is nothing that, you just never feel the kind of comfort you expect to feel even when you knew it was coming. So hopefully she is, you know, on her way to healing and really get some time to, feel comfortable. Yeah. I know that's gotta be a huge loss for her, because he seemed like a good guy.
Yeah, he seemed like a really good guy. So definitely want to send our shout out, our condolences, our prayers of comfort to Nene and Brand. Is it Brandon and
I think Brent? It's like Bryson or Bryce and Brett.
And Brett, Bryson and Brett. On the loss of Greg and to Greg's other kids, to your point. And yes. I have some grandkids in the mix too. I think so.
The family, for sure.
The family.
Speaking of Real Housewives though, Real Housewives of Potomac, it's just fiery, and we love Karen Huger. And
now Karen and Ray are getting remarried? Is that happening?
They are doing a 25-year vow renewal.
Okay.
That looks a lot like just a big ass expensive wedding. So love that for them.
And I think Karen didn't get that the first time around or something.
I think she got a pretty decent wedding for the time, I guess in the 90s. But, you know, Karen is out here. So Karen needs the mermaid dress and the finger waves to really feel current and, you know, have one more thing to hold over Giselle's head, which we love.
Oh, poor Karen.
That show, you think the mess is, you know, we saw the mess up front in the beginning of the season, but the second half of the season, that preview looks insane. So looking very much forward to how that unfolds and what altercations that non-confrontational Candace can get into the rest of the season.
Oh, man.
She didn't learn anything. Spoiler alert. No.
Of course not.
What else are we watching?
Did you have another TV note?
I'm just watching, what's the show that just came back? Work in Progress is back. I don't know if I ever talked about it on the show.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's on Showtime. It's about a queer, older white woman.
Okay.
And the whole premise of this show is that she had been planning to kill herself, but life got in the way.
Oh, wow.
She hasn't been able to. And, you know, her quest to find like a new therapist, because the therapist died in session in the very first episode.
Oh, my gosh. So,
like, it's a very, very, very good show. It's very funny. And it's back for season 2. I think it's on like episode 5. It's usually like 8 or 10.
Right.
Yeah, we see fireworks. I'm watching cartoons. Sorry.
That's okay.
So I've been watching Work in Progress, and it's.
Bye bye.
I'm almost done.
We're almost done, Ivy.
Say bye bye.
We're almost done, Ivy.
Oh, you're doing
it. Ivy's like, I'm wrapped. We're almost done. She's like, bye.
Ready. But yeah, so when I have time for TV, which is not very often lately, I've been watching either that or one of these own shows or nothing at all, honestly. Right. I've been reading, which is nice.
Okay. We like reading. Well, since Ivy is telling us it's time to go, but we were about to close anyway. I wanted to close on a slightly heavier note, just to acknowledge that tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of September 11th, which it feels crazy.
So hard to believe.
That's been 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I really had this thought the other day for the first time that there's a generation of adults, young adults, mm-hmm. who don't remember what life was like, what everyday life was like pre-September 11th.
Before
whereas
September 11th.
For me, in terms of like building security, flight security, mm-hmm. just different measures you take as you're going through the world. And it occurred to me that even now I approach TSA stuff with the thought of, oh my God, I'll be glad when we can stop doing this. And because these things were supposed to be temporary. Taking off your shoes wasn't even about September 11th. It was about a shoe bomber a couple of months after September 11th, but that was supposed to be temporary. Even like, I'm still annoyed by having to do, you know, sample size products.
Yeah, I can't bring my whole toiletry with me.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is, you know, some workarounds like pre-check and stuff like that, I don't take any bags out of my bag. Like, I just, I definitely don't have the like Ziploc, like one Ziploc bag full of shit. I got all kind of shit. It's just, they don't bother as long as there's not a big tub of fucking cream.
Right. You don't have to take it out anymore unless
they see something.
Yeah, unless you have like a giant. Say, I used to always have to travel with breast milk or milk for Ivy or whatever. So they have to take that out and they like
do a whole
thing. I don't know.
Do it's annoying. Shit.
Whatever.
I did that with my dad's ass.
Not like, stopping anything.
Yeah. But yeah, even like levels of security getting into buildings. You know, I was talking about flying. People talk about flying pre-September 11th. There are folks who are still amazed. So, like, you go to the gate. You go to the gate to meet your
people. Oh, yeah. My parents would walk me to the gate because I was younger.
At the gate when you get off the plane. Now, like,
they can check your luggage from the little
desk
outside of the jetway.
Yep. And now, also, you could go up and change your ticket, like, last minute. You can just walk up to the counter, change the shit, change the name on it. Do whatever. Like, it just was not that deep. None of it was
wasn't. You didn't need a passport to go to a lot of countries in this hemisphere. You just needed your birth certificate and an ID.
Yep. It was really kind of amazing, the stuff they let you get away with. So, yeah, but it also led me to realize, which I had already kind of come to the conclusion of, that how many things that have been implemented because of COVID aren't going to change. Right.
Right. I hate that this is our reality.
There is
I will say, not the 9/11 of our generation is like the Pearl Harbor of our parents' generation, and the way that changed things.
Yeah,
because when we came along, you know, there's still great reverence, especially in the military, for what happened at Pearl Harbor. But we all just kind of, you know, stand at the ceremony and like, okay. But that was that killed a lot of American citizens at the time in a place that we're supposed to be safe, which is the only way that I can explain it to like my 21-year-old nephew, which is like, I know you've only ever had to go through security when flying. I know that, you know, the Patriot Act that was passed afterward, which basically lets a cop do anything to you if they suspect you of quote unquote terrorism. Stuff like that didn't exist.
It didn't exist before. And terrorism, even though there have been things like Timothy McVeigh blowing up, you know, Oklahoma. And there having been another smaller World Trade Center bombing because one of the girls, JT from City Girls, bless her heart, was like, how did we know the World Trade was going to blow up? And most of radio sensors now blow up like the World Trade because there was a smaller World Trade Center explosion. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if anybody died.
It was a car bombing, and I think it only killed one person and injured, you know, a dozen people.
Yeah, but it was really small, very easily, like, moved past and gotten over. So that's what big meant. It wasn't this, there was no Illuminati. But there's people like, I'm like,
how did he know?
History just does not exist. But yeah, things were very different. Terrorism was something that you watched on TV that happened somewhere else. So the idea of it happening here was really scary. And also, mm-hmm. you can always tell by spy and action movies who America was in conflict with, right? So like in my mom's age, all the villains were always Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 80s, it was always the Russians. And which is why for those of us who are Gen Xers or older millennials, everything with Trump and Russia was like mind fucking boggling because our whole
lives. And terrifying as hell.
Yeah, our whole lives, Russia's the fucking enemy. Like, what are you talking about right now? Like, it's Russia. It's Russia. Okay. They mean danger. Like, that's what it means. And then since
early in the 90s, it became
Middle Eastern
and Arab.
Desert Storm, and so now that just picked up after September 11th. So yeah, it's interesting how it's interesting the propaganda that you see, even that stuff when you really realize it. But anyway, I really, really, really always try not to be in New York on September 11th. I'll be honest, I didn't lose anyone that day, and I was very far away from the site, like. It didn't impact me directly at all. The smoke from the towers collapsing had made its way up to Harlem. I remember it hit Harlem like that night. All of a sudden, the sky was really smoky, and I realized that was coming from downtown. But New York kind of, for a long time, relived that whole day every year. And to be here was just a lot. It was just a lot. Mm-hmm. I've tried not to be in the country on September 11th, if I can help it. This year, neither one of those things happened. I was going to go to New Orleans, but Ida. And by the way, sending love to all the listeners who have been in the path of the storm, even the ones here in New York, because it fucked, I mean, in the tri-state, because it fucked with a lot of people just up in this way.
Tornado in my parents' hometown.
Yeah,
or in my hometown, I should say.
Flooding or damage or loss of power, loss of life, loss of whatever. Like
loss of pets, loss of income.
It's been a lot over the past
property.
Week.
I was just thinking about that. Like,
the world is burning.
When we were in L.A., I was like, I'm not watching the news because, you know, just let me know if we're really close to a fire, which is a horrible thing to say when you're in California. But
California's burning. It's like
California is burning. And I'm like, I don't want to feel guilty being in the Hollywood Hills right now.
Yeah.
So just let me know.
The whole world is on fire. So I say, if we got anything today, charge it to our heads and not our hearts, because there's just so much.
There's just so much has happened. And back to school and the laws in Texas.
Yeah, I was about to say, we haven't even Texas and abortion and the scope and the Supreme Court being fucked up, and there's a lot
and my brain is all over the place, hormones are all over the place, I'm trying to relactate so that I can get antibodies into Ivy's milk every day.
You're gonna have to tell us more about that,
which is like
relactation sounds like
hell, because it's not fun. It's basically, so I'm taking a medication that one of the side effects is to supercharge your breast milk making capabilities. It releases prolactin in your pituitary, which causes, you know, all these things. But you do have to start to pump on a schedule so that your body gets those cues and whatever. But I'm willing to go through all of this for 30 to 60 days or so, because I really want to pump some milk. Just enough to put like a tiny bit in the regular milk she drinks every day.
Got it.
To give her some antibodies, because she is in school right now, and it's terrifying every day when I drop her off in her little mask. But she's doing well there, and they take a lot of precautions. But it's still like holy shit.
I get that. It's high anxiety. Oh, I want to say on a closing note, shout out to everyone whose kids have gone back into school this week for the first time since March of 2020, which is a lot of New York. And I'm imagining some other areas who have gone back mm-hmm. at night this week over the last month. Because I know in the South, school start, I think, like, end of August. And also, I have friends who are now going back into the office or kind of on a rolling schedule, you know.
A hybrid schedule or something.
Yeah. And, you know, either way, to readjust to that life is going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot for those who, you know, we have certain people who never stopped going into whatever, you know, our essential workers and some other workers who still had to have some kind of in-person contact. So for them, you know, life has kind of had some sense of normalcy. But for people who've been home for the past year and change, like, this is going to be really, like, it's a lot. I can't imagine going back into, like, a commuting office. Like, oh, my God.
Traffic picking up again. Having to deal with microaggressions from, like,
oh, the white people. Oh, my God.
Water cooler conversation.
White people have to deal with white
people. Shoot me. So my husband never stopped going to work. It's just that a few more extra folks are at work now. So I guess we've been kind of normal, but it's very bizarre to send my kid to school.
Yeah.
And to think about those things.
I want to say to everybody, continue to try to encourage your people to get vaccinated, but also still be cautious. The breakthrough is real. Infection. Get the booster shot when you can. All that good shit.
Yeah, I'm ready for a booster. And if your kids are of age, like, and they can, please get them the vaccine, because we know kids are resilient, but this is a lot for them. And the last thing that they need is to catch COVID.
Yeah.
On top of all this other anxiety. Like, just let's
our poor kids. Like, honestly, the biggest victims in all of this shit are really the kids. Because we're not going to really know how bad all of this shit fucked them up for like 20 years.
Oh, yeah. So you know then they'll get on whatever version of TikTok they have at that point and be telling us or telling their peers how to cope with parents who are home all the time or
something. They'll keep whatever the version is of right now. Shout out to the young millennials who are currently processing Steve from Blue's Clues coming back to y'all. And apologize
for that video.
Or abandoning y'all. Like, yo, the reactions to that shit from the people who are now like, talking about being able to move on from the trauma, and like, it's half jokes but also very real. That's what's killing me about it. To the people who are still mad at this dude, like mad for real, like, yo, you flat left us for dead, has been really entertaining to watch, and has also like just explained a lot to me about y'all that I've
been really the reaction, like watching them be angry at this man for going to college and never coming back.
Like, he didn't go to college. I think the thing is, like, Steve didn't actually go to college. He was going through some shit, but it's like
he was also like 40. Like, he wanted to do something else.
He was grown. Like, he was like, God, fuck this shit. There was a lot going on, but y'all niggas is really mad. Y'all are really upset. Like, nah, but he left us. But
if you weren't around for the birth of Paprika, you cannot be in this conversation. And I'm just,
oh my God.
I know Mr. Salt and Miss Pepper had like a whole, but guys, let's just bring it back.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
I'm aged out of Blue's Clues. I was a teenager. I knew it was a thing that like Steve left the show, whatever, whatever. But this has been fascinating. Fascinating. There's another one today where God was like, you bastard. Like, it's just like, fascinating me. It's fascinating. So anyway, we're going to have some version of that, but about COVID in another 10 to 15 years watching that. But my heart goes out to all y'all. None of this shit is easy right now. Do what you can. But hopefully, I'm not sure when the fuck Sean is back, to be honest, but at least the three of us are back next week.
On a world tour.
This nigga's gone for like 3 weeks. But we're in week two. So Sean may be back if not week after next. But at least me and Jeff will be back. Jeffrey, I hope I hit all the points that you wanted to hit, even if I didn't make them in the way that you wanted to make them. But you ain't here, so that doesn't matter.
I promise to watch all the TV in that list because I have not watched any of it, so that we can talk about it next week.
We will see y'all next week. Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.